As you know, Building Remote Teams is a brand new podcast. And to celebrate our launch, we have some really awesome discounts to give you from some of our favorite tools for remote teams. We have discount tools for 1Password, Donut, Hey Taco, Carrot, Birthday Bot, Karma Bot, and a ton more. All you need to do is to go to buildingremoteteams.com and subscribe with your email. You'll get a link to the page with all of the recommended tools and discounts that I mentioned above. Now, on to the show. There are lots of examples of companies that start out remote and stay remote as they scale. Today on the show, though, we have one of those rare companies who started with everyone sitting together in the office and then decided to become remote after the fact. So why did Springboard Retail decide to make the transition, and how did it go? Well, stay tuned to find out. Hey everyone, welcome back to Building Remote Teams. I'm here with Jen Raines Loring. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you doing today?
Great, thanks. So Jen, we met on LinkedIn. We had a phone call. We were just chatting about, you know, HR challenges and successes that we've both had in the remote space. I'm super excited about Springboard Retail because you guys actually made the transition from being a all traditional in an office sitting together to moving entirely remote. Is that right? Did I get that right?
Yes, that is correct. We were kind of a fully functioning traditional office based in South Boston, 20 some people showing up 5 days a week. So doesn't get more traditional than that. And that was just about 18 months ago, actually. Wow. And now we're just under 50 people. We're completely remote, as you said, distributed across 11 US states and 7 countries, actually. So big transition over the last year and a half.
Amazing. So let's hear a little bit about that story. Tell me about, what is Springboard Retail all about?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are the leading point of sale and retail management software company. We both develop and deliver our software product. As I mentioned, we are formerly based in Boston, but now are kind of spread everywhere. And one thing we, you know, kind of always enjoy sharing about the company is that we're authentically retailers. Long story short, our founders operated a specialty retail chain. So the product was really incubated over a very long period of time by people living retail every day. So we often find that we win business because customers feel we really understand retail and their retail challenges.
So your team was all sitting together in the office. There's 20 of you sitting, I guess, in South Boston. This is, you made a distinction of not Boston. This is South Boston, which I don't know, maybe if you're from Boston, this makes sense to you. So tell me, like, what was going through your mind? What was the dynamic there that all of a sudden started to spur on this desire to go remote or at least explore it?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, that's funny. I didn't even think about making the South Boston distinction, but it actually kind of is important to the story in that I guess you could say South Boston is a little bit more kind of up and coming part of Boston. So great place for a really early stage company. I frankly, however, think that on a couple of levels, we just outgrown the space, certainly in terms of physical capacity, but also in terms of the neighborhood as well. So when it came time to consider kind of new office space, it just really opened up kind of a whole host of issues we were facing. Certainly soaring real estate prices in the Boston kind of area in general. And knowing that we wanted to kind of move to a different, more retail-centric neighborhood, which is really difficult because even though most of our team at the time was in Boston, it felt like no matter where we moved the office, people were going to get stuck with 45-minute, you know, or longer commutes from all directions. So just even within in the city, there just wasn't an ideal place for everybody on the team.
So you were looking at real estate and you're talking with the team members, say, what about this? What about this? And then some people would be like, hey, that'd be amazing for commute-wise. Exactly. And the others, they just like, you see the energy just like leave their body.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, if I want to give up 2.5 hours every day, sure, that's a great location. Exactly. So I felt like we looked far and wide and just even within, you know, a great city like Boston, it's just, I think because of the current state of Boston just being as popular as it is for other technology companies, et cetera, commutes are getting very, very long. Even if you travel kind of 8 or 10 miles, you can be talking multiple hours. So clearly a deterrent for our team. And then I think just outside of kind of Boston specific issues, we were just sensing employee demand for more flexibility. You know, I had some really thoughtful discussions with our co-founders and it was just starting to feel like we were kind of on like the wrong side of history if that makes sense, and continuing to fight against like increased flexibility. There are just so many factors in the world that are pointing to increased employee flexibility. And whether it was, could I work from home one day a week, or can I leave at a certain hour, or could I travel here for 2 weeks? Like, employees just want flexibility. And it just felt like we were having conversations kind of all over the place and trying to hold the line. And then we were like, but why are we so strict about this? Like, maybe we should consider being kind of flexible at an entirely different level. So I think a combination of market conditions and then just employees being outspoken about their needs led us to try to be completely remote.
So what were the other issues that you were, or questions, I guess, that you were asking yourselves as you're going through this reflection and soul searching about when you move? So, you know, the commuting was an issue. There was this, those people that were, that, you know, tremors or tremblings of requests of people trying to, you know, have more flexible time, whether it's in the office or, you know, just when they work. Was there other stuff that played into kind of moving towards trying out this remote thing?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, I mean, to your point, these types of decisions tend to have a lot of inputs. You know, I think that as well, like, we're still an early stage company, right? We have about 50 employees, as I mentioned, reasonably well established, but still scaling, right? And so I think you kind of hit some classic challenges around, especially at a higher growth company, like headcount continues to increase, right? And so I think there's just office sizing questions, right? From a business standpoint, it's like, do you get the cavernously large office now and not quite have the people in it to fill it, but knowing you'll be there in 18 months? Or do you crowd in and, you know, everybody wants a really long lease in a hot market? So I certainly think there are kind of size issues there that, you know, are reality for people's kind of daily work experience in the space. And then I also just think we were, you know, we're a technology company, right? And so I think we're just really cognizant of, you know, wanting to be competitive in terms of benefits, you know, work experience, et cetera, but not just copy. So I think we were kind of going down that path of trying to get the snacks and the fancy seltzer water and the nice office furniture. And, you know, frankly, we had a ways to go on all of those kind of dimensions, as I'm sure our employees would agree.
You had the better water.
So yeah. That's a start, right? But then it's like, I think you start to put energy into some of those things. And I think we were kind of like, we're always very thoughtful about this type of thing. Like, is this making a difference? Like, is this the right priority for, you know, the employees, the business, et cetera? So I think as we started to get kind of caught up in some of those things that are popular in markets like Boston, we're like, you know, we should be thoughtful. Like, is this what we want to stand for? Is this why people work here, basically? So I think it invited some deeper reflections about kind of company and culture and identity as well.
I like that. What about, you know, one of the big considerations or I guess reservations that people have with remote is, what about the collaboration thing or the camaraderie of everyone being in the office and, like, you know, doing the 60-hour work weeks together and have, you know, working on the whiteboard together? Like, did you guys think that was going to be an issue?
Definitely. And should say that I think it continues to be something that we've made a ton of progress on, but is always top of mind for us, frankly. So, you know, I think what was really key is that our co-founders were really on board with trying kind of to become a work from anywhere company. And to your point about collaboration, I think we quickly realized, looking back after a bit of experimentation, but reasonably quickly, that when it comes to collaboration, work from anywhere was really the distinction we were trying to make. And I shouldn't take credit, our CEO and co-founder, that's kind of his term, and he felt strongly about sticking to it. And at first I thought it was kind of like a technicality versus work from home. I remember thinking, like, well, where are most people working from home? However, I think it's a really big, important distinction that he was forward looking about, because I think work from anywhere means you have to think about collaborating among everybody under various conditions all the time, right? So it puts collaboration really foremost, whether that's tools and systems and technology, or whether it's making sure that employees understand that the expectation is that they will have a quiet working space and can easily kind of, you know, log on to whatever communication platform we're using, even into, you know, kind of changing up how you use Slack and other communication tools. Collaboration is really, really key for us. And our standard's pretty high. It needs to be that people can pretty much work from anywhere at any point and still feel that they're plugged into the team.
Yeah. I mean, we were just saying right before the call, you know, Jen, you're pregnant, you're expecting, you know, your second baby.
Yeah.
And you're saying you're doing work from the doctor's office because there's lots of appointments that are, needed. You know, and so by the distinction of saying, you know, working from home, like those are quote unquote hours that kind of count towards your time being spent versus being in the doctor's office when maybe that would not be considered, you know, time spent for work because, you know, surely you can't get work done when you're sitting in a waiting room for an hour and a half, you know.
It's so, true.
So I think that that does make sense that there's a distinction there. I'm not saying which one's, you know, right or wrong, but at least having that maybe explicitly stated is pretty powerful.
Yeah, and I think the team becomes accepting of it, right? Like I would have felt so bad. Like even thinking back to my first pregnancy has been a very different experience because we were office-based then, even just 2 years ago, versus now. Like I think I would have felt guilty about going to the doctor, which is kind of crazy, right? Because you have to go to the doctor when you're pregnant. But versus now, like, maybe I look a little bit crazy to the other patients in the doctor's office, but you know, you find a quiet corner, you plug in, and nobody on the Springboard retail team thinks it's weird that I'm doing that. People kind of just don't miss a beat, which I think has been huge for maintaining productivity, you know, just not only for myself, but for anybody else dealing with life situations, right? So the fact that the team kind of starts to accept that as normal is also a big part of it.
Yeah, normal. I think that's really powerful for being inclusive as well, right? Like you're now enabling people who have lots of, you know, medical appointments, whether they're pregnant or they have other issues where they need to do that. You know, the company is explicitly saying like, hey, this is okay. Like this is part of life. Awesome. Very cool. Okay. So everyone's on board. They're getting ready to try it. No one's working from a doctor's office yet. how did you start down this process? Yeah. How did you guys get started?
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of a nice segue from our conversation just now into your next question. You know, something we realized, though, to your point, nobody was well equipped to work from a doctor's office yet at that point. As I'm sure many other companies face, we did have this moment where we realized there was already a subset of people who were remote, right? Whether it was because there were somewhat specialized skills they had and we kind of needed to move on their skills versus their location, or whether they were employees who were based in Boston but moved away for personal reasons. We kind of had this moment that we were like, you know, this must be working on some level, or it can work because we have people who are working here but not physically in Boston. So our CTO in particular, who's also co-founder of the business, he was overseeing a dispersed engineering team at the time. So there were kind of enough glimmers of hope, I think, that we were like, you know, could kind of take some things we've learned quietly and didn't even frankly know we learned until we thought about it that way and kind of build on those. So I think realizing that was really key. But, you know, beyond that, it was really scary, right? I actually have documented on LinkedIn kind of a month-by-month look at the early journey. And I only share that because what you'll find, even when I look kind of looking back now, it was a roller coaster in the beginning for sure. There was a ton of experimentation, definitely some mess-ups and some quick iterations of things, lots of laughs and maybe some tears at times. It was certainly a roller coaster. But I think most importantly, we had a couple things going for us, right? We did have that co-founder support, which I think was huge.
Huge. Yes.
We also very much treated it as a major strategic initiative, right? And that's kind of one of the just tips I would share about considering any transition, meaning that we could have formalized my role as head of people. And, you know, kind of being a member of the executive team, like, frankly, kind of made me accountable for the outcomes, right? And as you would with any strategic initiatives, that means you're not only accountable for, sure, the people experience and you know, how people are experiencing work and those types of improvements, but then also the business results, right? So I think having someone really guide this, lead this every day that's on the executive team, it really underscored the importance of it and made sure this wasn't kind of like a loose plan that didn't come to fruition, if that makes sense.
I see. It does. So it sounds like, you know, the founders had said, all right, Jen, you know, you're the head of people, VP people, whatever, you know, this is your thing. And did you have metrics that you set up to figure out if this was going to, be successful or not, like that you said accountability. So somehow there had to be some sort of framework for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I would definitely love to look back and say, yes, we were really organized on the metrics front. However, that wasn't exactly the case. But I think by instinct of being, again, back to that kind of strategic initiative, we certainly knew things had to be measured. So I think even early on, our instincts were to look at two things, right? One would be, like I said, kind of overall business results, like the exec team is accountable for growing the business in line with targets and work from anywhere, and kind of all the people operations are part of that, right? So I think ensuring that we were regularly hitting aggressive business targets was kind of table stakes, if that makes sense. Like without that, then right, Nothing's working, right? But then beneath there, We originally definitely leaned into productivity, collaboration, and happiness, kind of being three things that, for whatever reason, I think I just thought those were a good place to start in terms of employee self-reported data, basically. One of our great regrets is not getting a baseline just before we left our traditional office, but we certainly tried kind of right after when we realized that we certainly want to track metrics and be metrics driven about this decision-making process. So we didn't nail it on measuring baseline just before we left the office, but right after. So kind of a close proxy. And over time, we have maintained those metrics and then also added professional growth and then satisfaction with relationships among colleagues. So we basically measured those five things on a quarterly basis and certainly track the trends over time.
Okay, so you sent everyone home or said, hey, you can work from anywhere, and then you started tracking these metrics. How did you do that? How do you track employee happiness, collaboration, productivity? How did you do that?
Yeah, so I agree it requires a certain type of team who really wants to go on this journey with you, first and foremost. Yeah. And then you have to make them feel this journey is worthwhile, right? But you know, one other thing we did to kind of get the transition started is we definitely said this was a 90-day experiment. And it started kind of late spring of last year and conveniently went over the summer. Again, not that we should take credit for planning it that way. It just kind of happened that way. But looking back, that's a great time of year, especially if you're in the New England area, because let's be honest, that's one of the times of year that people desire the most flexibility, right? Kids are off from school, people have, you know, beach trips and vacations and second homes, that type of thing.
The weather is not terrible.
Exactly. So people want to work from somewhere other than, right, inside. So it was a great time to kind of run a pilot. And we were very clear that this is something that we're going to try for this set period of time. We actually continued to look for office space during this time, knowing that we kind of might make one of several decisions at the end. So I think back to your question about metrics, employees understood it was really important to share feedback, right? So they were very game to continue to give kind of both self-rated quantitative feedback, as well as just have a lot of conversations with myself and the other executives about where the challenges were. And people kind of innately understood, like, this is the time to speak up too. Like, they are looking to make real decisions about the future working model of the company. I am part of this experiment. So I think framing it that way helped. We certainly, you know, measured via survey at key increments. You know, we let people know in advance, this is what we would be doing. But beyond there, honestly, just a lot of conversations as well. And I think people were very candid. And in the beginning, it was really hard. Some people have been showing up at an office for 20 years at this point, right? And then kind of a random Monday, they didn't anymore. So just taking time and really making it a priority to talk through what people were experiencing and understand how we could help and what we would need to introduce into the model to make this work. We took ample time for that last summer.
Mm-hmm. Did some people hate it?
Definitely. Thankfully.
Really?
Yeah. And yeah, it's funny because I feel like the taglines in the world on remote work are so positive. Definitely. You know, I was very open, you know, kind of really just into sharing it just generally in the hopes that people can learn. But I personally was miserable in the beginning. Like, I actually considered like getting out my resume and like polishing it up to start applying because I was.
But you're running this thing, Jen.
So true. It was like,
what the heck? This does not bode well for you.
Right? No, it's so true. It's very us too. Like as a group, we tend to be kind of candid and authentic in that way. Thankfully, right. Very okay. Close to my boss and the other co-founder. And I think, you know, being really honest about my own struggles probably was helpful because I think if I was more cheerleader about it and kind of was like, oh, this is like the way of the future, it may not have made others be so kind of open as well. So, no, I think most people struggled with the transition, if I'm being honest with you.
What was your challenge?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think looking back, it's work is because it's kind of so has to fit the context of life, right? I actually think that as like a new working mother, I had come back from maternity leave at the beginning of 2018 and kind of had optimized my whole life around, you know, kind of full-time nanny, my daughter would be at home, commute into the city, like we had moved to a certain location so that you know, all this would work. I think it was almost just like a sunk cost problem, like almost hard to think that like I kind of set up this is a great plan, right? As we all always do, but then realize like, wow, like this is all changing, right? And so I think that was really hard for me to get over. And I think a lot of people make decisions based on physical location of work, right? I certainly wasn't in the minority on that. So I think really being able to shift into a completely different mindset was hard, especially after kind of having gone through other like personal transitions so recently. And honestly, I was just lonely in the beginning and kind of a people person, obviously. And this was before we got kind of really into building our virtual community and so many of the things we have now. I think in the first few days, I was like, this doesn't even feel like work. So, which helped me realize there was like a lot of opportunity, but a lot of work to do to make this like a thriving remote work model. But you know, ultimately the vast, vast majority of people came through on the other side. We're always honest. Mm-hmm. Certainly there was a handful of people who just were so open and honest and we respect that. And we're kind of like, look like based on my life stage or, you know, kind of just individual preferences. I want to go to an office every day. So it's not that we didn't lose a few people along the way and those that we still wish well. But I think by the time we got to the end of the summer, we knew that this experiment had kind of turned into reality. And we were very open about that. And certainly, you know, if it wasn't working for people, we respected that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So even so through this pilot and as you were kind of solidifying it now as the, you know, as an official, you know, permanent company policy, there were some people it's like, well, I don't want to do this remote thing and ended up, you know, they ended up leaving.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that makes sense. That's, I mean, unfortunate, but yeah, I mean.
And certainly something to be prepared for, right? Like we always try to share both the positive and the not quite as positive because it's a huge transition to go through, right? And certainly to go into it thinking that everybody will kind of have the same values and certainly just lean into the pros equally as probably a little bit naive. So yes, there were certainly a few kind of casualties on the team and would certainly kind of share that as a cautionary tale for people considering it.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for being transparent about that. What other kind of, I want to get, you know, not just into the dirt, but like the other nuances of things that happened during the transition and during the pilot, like what other kind of stuff happened?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a crazy time. And so there's many, many things, but no, a couple of key things. I mentioned this earlier. I think it's not as obvious looking back, but something I would highly recommend is we really leaned into building the virtual community earlier. And frankly, at times that felt a little crazy, right? Because we are a high growth tech startup. And here I am planning virtual coffee dates and video sessions where people get on and talk about their hobbies. And there were certainly times that I've been like, wow, does this make any sense as an executive priority? But frankly, I think that when you add up that set of activities that we refer to as the community, I think we gained a lot of value through that, especially because we were used to seeing each other every day, right? And we went through this kind of abrupt change. So we went, of course, we kind of started off with your one-on-one coffee date and your random Slack channel, as you'll see writings out there in the world about. But frankly, we've gone from a basic kind of, you know, way to facilitate interactions to like a full quarterly agenda of community driven things, all virtual for sure. We've experimented with different group sizes, different times of day to meet time zone requirements. But and do I think any one set of coffee dates or, you know, related activities saves the world? No. But I think when you put focus on this to make sure that people are seeing other individuals they work with outside of their like immediate manager and team, and people know that it's there and that once a week or once every 10 days they can pop on and have a social interaction, I think that's what was really key in the beginning. So that was important for sure.
So even people coming on as a company and sharing their hobbies of foosball and collecting watches, you know, like you found this to actually make a difference for the employees.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny you would say that because we've had very similar sessions. You know, I remember one of our earliest ones, one of my colleagues actually said to me at one point in time, like, our goal should be to go way deeper than the water cooler, right? Like if there's not going to be a water cooler, don't just try to copy the water cooler, right? Which I thought was a very insightful comment because let's be honest, at the average water cooler, you don't get beyond sports, weather, how are your kids, you know, it's so right. True. And we were like, this is an opportunity to bring out other sides of people. And in fact, you kind of have to, right? Because one thing we've learned about virtual social events is that a little structure goes a long way to making people feel comfortable versus just everyone looking at each other on the video screen, right? So in an early session, back to your point, I remember our head of product and engineering talked about his kind of earlier in life career in cricket. He was a professional cricket player. I didn't even know what cricket was before he gave a session. And he was reasonably new to the company at the time. So it was also just like a great way to get to know him and where he grew up. And our head of operations at the time did a session on space operas and kind of how that's been like a passion for him. So just things, it'd be hard to kind of strike up a conversation about space operas at the water cooler, right?
Yeah. Tell me about your space opera.
Tell me about your hobby you haven't shared with me yet, right? So right. Yeah, I feel like we combine that type of thing with, even did like a virtual holiday party this past year. Oh. Yeah, which was like an interesting experiment, but we did like global holiday trivia and it was just interesting, just different sides of people's competitive nature came out. It was great. So I think with enough of that, the cumulative effect is pretty powerful.
So you did this pilot, 90 days, you're measuring metrics. How did the metrics look at the end of this thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think not surprisingly, probably productivity and happiness as reported by employees is soaring, right? It's kind of been consistently in the high 90s on a scale of 100. So I think, you know, the benefits of remote work and productivity, it's very multi-layered, as we started to talk about earlier. So those two things, I think, are really important, right? I think they're really important to companies at every stage, especially when you're in a rapid scaling phase. I think maintaining high productivity and high employee happiness is just paramount, right? So that in of itself was kind of noteworthy enough at the conclusion of 90 days for us to be like, yeah, this is worth continuing, right? And further, I think we could see it, right? We had a great summer last summer in terms of the business and our rate of growth. So I think those kind of top three things were all kind of lining up. You know, however, as I said, we always try to share, you know, the not so good news as well. Perhaps also not surprisingly, relationships and collaboration did dip initially. Certainly if you go from being in an office every day face-to-face and then you are no longer there, you would expect some changes. Though interestingly, some springboarders, as we call ourselves, who had been remote before and when we were kind of more broadly based in an office as a team, they had some clear uptick, not surprisingly, right? Because now everybody's forced to kind of overcome some of these communication barriers. So we learned a lot from people who were working remotely before, and they certainly were helpful in understanding kind of how their situation had actually improved. Nice. And we've worked aggressively, everything from we've added an internal knowledge base. We have standardized our communication platform. There was a time where we were using everything from Zoom to GoToMeeting to Hangout Meet, I'm sure we've all been there, to everything in between. And teams had specific tools. So we really had to like standardize across a lot of teams to make sure that collaboration was as seamless as possible. And like I said, that's an ongoing journey for sure. But those figures as self-reported by employees quarterly have also stabilized in the high 80s. So we feel that we've made great progress there. But frankly, our kind of gold standard is to see things like relationships and collaboration right up there with productivity and happiness. So lots of progress and certainly still some work to do there as well.
Great. And you're using, like, what are you using to collect these metrics? Are you using just like a Google form or a type form? Or
do you have software for that? Absolutely. So we are using Google Forms. It's funny though, I think part of modern people operations, especially in a remote team, is kind of constant emphasis on emerging tools and new options out there. So I think our goal, as we're actually looking for a new performance management system, and I think there's a lot of great programs out there that combine performance management with culture and kind of broader feedback about kind of like an employee experience. So certainly looking to upgrade from Google Forms, but it's served us well in the last 18 months. So I can't complain about it being kind of like the minimum viable product of employee feedback.
Yeah, it seems like a great way to get started for sure until you figure out what you
need. Yeah.
That's great. Tell us, Jen, a little bit about your kind of self-reflection paper that you guys have available online or that you're launching today.
Yes, absolutely. And I so appreciate you giving us the opportunity to kind of launch it live with you. Yeah, so one of the best aspects of kind of my job personally and then being in a leadership position on a remote work transition has just been the number of people interested in how this works and, you know, can it work for their company? So I've gotten to have the most amazing conversations, including with people like yourself, obviously. So, and we got a good number of requests for kind of how did this really work, right? Like to your point, kind of a little bit beyond the why you should think about remote work. There's clearly so many, you know, kind of benefits that are reasonably obvious, right? Everything from recruiting to cost. I mean, there's just a lot of benefits, right? But operationalizing this, on the other hand, is kind of a different story, right? So we have a white paper on our transition to remote work, and it really is geared to kind of help others ask themselves the right questions, right? I will say, looking back, that certainly there are some companies out there that have set a good example, and that was very helpful. I do think when it came to like core operational questions like policies and benefits, how does everyone get a computer? Does the company still own the computer? Where do you get the mail? Kind of just the gamut of issues that are opened up by remote work. What do you do about communication, collaboration, all the things we've been talking about? There was still a lot of room, I think, out there to talk about what works, what people have learned, et cetera. And we learned a lot by experimentation, right? I have to say that's been the other thing that's kind of made this whole thing work, is that everybody on the team was willing to experiment. And I think we've iterated really quickly. So the white paper is our attempt to kind of, as I mentioned, help people ask the right questions that we wish we would have known to ask in advance, frankly. Maybe not quite as much iteration would have been necessary. And then also kind of related, share some just really tactical tips that we picked up along the way, kind of more into the nitty gritty things that I was just mentioning before, those operational details that frankly start to come pretty fast and furious once you give up your office, right? There's just a lot of people slacking you being like, what are we doing about this? So the white paper gets into some of those less glamorous sides of remote work that somebody frankly needs to think through though. So would love to share that with anybody who's interested. And I'm also happy to engage with other HR professionals or leaders out there who are curious, because sharing our story has been a really, really fun part of this. And I love learning from other companies too, as they go on their journey.
Awesome. And I will put the link into the show notes. Jen, last question. I never asked you this in advance. What is your key go-to like tool, gadget, you know, thing that you have that you cannot live without to get your remote work done?
Oh, wow. Interesting. You know, this is a very instinctive answer, but I think probably a function of my life phase. Not quite gadgety, but I have an extra large water bottle that holds like a day's worth of water. And I say that because I think it kind of represents a lot about remote work, in that I kind of had to get some things where I can be set up to work in a room or as I said, kind of on the go without a lot of disruption. So even small things like running downstairs, trying to run past my 2-year-old who wants to play with me all day just to get water are things I think you learn to optimize over time. So actually the things that I can't live without in remote work at this point in time are kind of basic supplies and enable me to be productive anywhere, including the biological basics like access to water on a consistent basis.
Interesting. Not something I would have expected anyone ever say as their favorite tool for remote, but I can definitely see that. Jen, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. Look forward to remaining in contact.
Awesome. Yeah, of course. All right. So listeners, thanks. And until next time from Jen and myself, Jevin, thanks. And keep on building those remote teams. Bye. All right. So today we got a new review from Scott1Rust. He says, the flow of knowledge is just as useful for remote teams as employees in the office. Taylor Jacobs, episode 3, hit the nail on the head with the idea of working together with greater intention rather than slipping into each day. Looking forward to the lineup of guests you've got booked. Thanks. All right. Well, if you want to have your review read on the air, I'd love to get your feedback. So just go into your favorite podcast player, leave a review, and I'll read it here. Until next time. Hey, listeners. We're really trying to get the message out about how remote teams can be so awesome. If you found this podcast helpful, would you take 60 seconds to leave us a review in iTunes? It helps us rank to have more people learn about this show, and it helps us know which content is the most helpful. As a thank you, I'll try to read every review on the show and give you a shout out. Thanks a lot!